Masechet Nazir, Daf Samech He. This and the next couple of Mishnayot have nothing to do with Nazir. They are here because in the previous Mishnah we mentioned the phrase Raglaim LaDavar, which means that although we're not sure one way or another, there's a presumption. We follow the previous Chazakah. And so in these next couple of cases also, we're going to decide what to do based on a presumption of what's most likely. Okay, the subject now is finding a great grave, and what to do with that grave, what is its status. Here's the general background of moving a grave. In general, one is not allowed to move a Jewish grave. One is permitted to move a non-Jewish grave. In order to move a Jewish grave, it has to be that the person was buried there only temporarily to begin with. And so for some reason, whatever, there was a side, the side of the road, they didn't have access to anything, they buried them there with intention, no, we're going to move them later, then it's permitted. And that's why even until today, we don't move graves for any reason, unless, for example, to move the person to Israel. So then we say, oh, this is temporary, they wanted to go to Israel. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. Now, so how do we decide if we find a grave, whether this is meant to be temporary or permanent? One factor is it in a cemetery, an area designated as a cemetery? Then we presume it's permanent. But if it's one grave that's found in the middle of nowhere, then we presume that the person, they just couldn't get to a cemetery right then, and we presume that it's temporary and we can move it. So that's the first halacha here. Hamose met batechila mushkav kedarko notlo ve'et tefusato. If one finds a corpse for the first time, in other words, they didn't know it was there before. If you knew it was there before, then presumably this was known, this person was put there, was put placed there on purpose, and then you can't move them. But if someone is just going along the way and sees something suspicious, starts digging up and finds a body there that no one had known before, so if it's buried in the usual way of Jewish burial, which is face up, lying down, outstretched, so then we presume this is a Jewish burial and no one knew about it before. It must have been temporary. So then one can notlo, one can remove that body. And when you remove a body, you should also take some of the surrounding earth around it. The reason is because that surrounding earth may have absorbed some of the blood or other liquids that came from the body, or maybe it's part of the decayed body that turned into dust. So we want to take everything that belonged to the body with it. So we take some of the earth around it, and that would be permitted to move it. Okay, that's if you find just one. But what if you're digging there and you find shenayim notan ve'tifusatan? If you find two, same law. You can move both of them. However, masa shelosha im yesh ben ze laze marba amot vad shemona hare zo shechunat kevarot. If one finds three bodies in close proximity, and proximity means between 4 and 8 amot, meaning all three are within within a space of between 4 and 8 amot, then we presume this was actually designated as a cemetery. Here's a picture on the side here of what cemeteries looked like. Back in the Talmudic times, people generally buried in a cave. They would have a cave and hollow out niches in the cave all around. And so that would be designated, this would be like a family cave. Here is a better picture where you can see that along one wall, there would be three niches, right? And these are about, if you measure from one end to the other, it'll be about somewhere between 4 and 8 amot. There might be other niches on the sides of it and an entrance right where, as we're looking in. And so this would be one burial plot. And so if you find just one or just two, then there's probably just a random burial somewhere on the way, and it was temporary. But three in a row, this most likely is part of a designated burial plot. So there might be a cave like this. If there is a cave like this, then as we're going to see in a second, there might be another cave nearby where another family would bury. So there might be a complex of caves that are next to each other. Okay, so it's because this is interesting, you learn a lot about burial customs in ancient Israel. All right, so now we see the difference between two and three. Now, bodek kemenu ul halan asrim ama. If someone finds three burials all together, and that's now designated as a burial spot, as a cemetery, then you have to go and check 20 amot around that area, because if there's one burial spot here, then it's likely that there are other burial spots as well, and we want to make sure to find all this tumah. You won't be able to move them, but you want to designate them so that everybody knows that, and if they're passing through, this is a cemetery. And if one does find from the original burial area, if you check 20 amot and you found another burial area, then keep going. Check from there 20 amot around that. Now, you don't have to check forever, right? Because there's no end to it. But generally, when you had these burial caves near each other, they would be within 20 amot. That's how they were arranged. So when we find one that's within 20, it's likely, here we have the phrase, raglaim la davar, literally there are legs to stand on. It means there's a good presumption that if there's one burial site here, there's probably another burial site nearby, so you should go and check. And now back to the basic principle, she'ilu techila mesa'o, if one had found only a single corpse initially, then one would have been able to remove it with the surrounding earth and move it aside. But once we find three, then we say, oh, there's a burial area, and we have to go and do this investigation, and we cannot move them from that place. All right, that is the Mishnah. And now Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is going to give some commentary on the opening of the Mishnah. Masa parat lemasui. This is very interesting. He's taking each word of the beginning of the Mishnah and is going to learn something from it. Same way that we do for Pisukim when we atomize and we learn something from each word. He's actually doing this to a Mishnah. So we have Hamoseh met betechila mushkav kedarko notlo ve'et tivusato. So we have Hamoseh, he's quoting it as matzah. Okay, but same verb. If someone finds, so that means only if you find it, but not if it had been found. Not if it was known that it was there already. If it was known it was there already, then we presume someone put it there on purpose. This is it was there meant to be permanent. But if it was just found and no one knew about it, it must be somebody was in a rush or they put it there temporarily. And now met pirat leharug, only if the people that were there died of natural causes, if you find three in a row, then we say, oh, this is a permanent grave site. But if the person was killed violently, now you could tell from the body, if you see if there's any injuries, even if it's a skeleton, you could see if there's something broken or the skull was bashed in. We find things like that sometimes. Okay, so if they were killed, these three people, then you could say that they were buried here temporarily, right? Whoever found them, maybe the killer or whoever found them after, just buried them on the spot. But this is meant to be temporary. If, however, they died a natural death and there's no evidence of any violence here, then, and you find three in a row, then you have to leave them there. That's a permanent burial site. Mushkav perat leyoshev kedarko perat lesherosho monach ben yad chotav. Mushkav, if it has to be lying down, and that excludes if it's buried sitting up or upright, because Jewish burials are done lying down. If it's if the person is upright, then it's evidence that it's not a Jewish burial. And kedarko means the normal way, and that means if it's head. That comes to exclude a case where the head is put between the thighs, kind of folded over. There, non-Jews had different ways of burying. Lots of different cultures have different ways of positioning a body in the grave. But if you see that a different kind of position, then you can assume it's not a Jewish burial. And in that case, even if there's three in a row, you can move them. But if it's if it's the normal Jewish custom, a burial, and you find the three in a row, then you have to leave it. Tane ula bar hanina mecha chased en lo tefusa velo shechunat kebarot vechol hane maitamala amrin andil magoyhu. And to add to this list, if it's the corpse is missing an important part of the body that it wouldn't be able to live without, then you don't have to take any part of the surrounding area, and we don't apply the law that if it's with three, that's called a grave site, right? Rather, you can move them. What's the reason? Because we assume that this is this is non-Jews buried them. Non-Jews would bury even a partial corpse here and a partial corpse there. And the Jews would make sure to bring all the parts of the body, if they could, and put them together. And so if it's missing, that's one missing important parts. That's an indication that it's a non-Jewish burial site. Masa shenayim, rosho shel ze besad margilotav shel ze, verosho shel ze besad margilotav shel ze, en lahen tefusa velo shechunat kebarot. If one finds there's two corpses there, but they're upside down. One's head is facing west, and the other one's head is facing east, right? Even though they're parallel, right next to each other, but they're facing in different directions. So that's also in a Jewish burial site, everyone is oriented the same way. And so because this is not a Jewish way of burial, so this is likely not a Jewish burial site, and there is no law of taking the surrounding earth and designating it as a burial site if there's three does not apply. Masa shelosha, echad yadua o shnayim techila, o shnayim techila o shnayim yadu'im, en lahem tefusa ve'en lahem shechunat kevarot. If one finds, if there are three burials, but one was known already, and two of them you just found now, or even if it's two that knew already and two that you found out now, they don't combine to make three as a burial site, right? So in other words, they're kept separate, and therefore one would be able to move the new ones that you found. So to say it again, right? If there's a grave, everybody knows there's a grave here. It's one grave, okay? So whatever reason it was there, and then as someone is looking around nearby, he finds one or two more. So we don't say, oh, look, now it's a grave area because there's three. Rather, the one that was found that was known about already is a separate category, and we only look at the new ones that were found as their own category. And since it's not three new ones, one could move those. Now, over here, although it says en lahem tefusa, you don't have to take the surrounding area, this is unusual because they if they're buried normally, we presume it is a Jewish grave. And if it's a Jewish grave and you find one or two, you could move it, but you do have to take the surrounding earth. So we might probably should follow Tosefta here that says yesh lahem tefusa. Maybe it's just a mistake that happened because of the previous cases that said en lahem tefusa. But the other law would apply that it's not called a graveyard. We don't combine the one that was known with the two that are not, that became known, to they don't join together to make a graveyard, and one could move those one or two new ones that he found. And we have a story just like this. Maaseh b'Rabbi Shebab, Shebadaku maaseh shenayim yeduim ve'chad techila, u'bikesh la'asotan shechunat kebarot. Sure enough, Rabbi Yeshev, a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, he was known to be very generous, even too generous. He gave away too much of his money to the poor. Anyway, one time he was checking around some graves, and he found two that were known already. But then there was one new one that he found, and so he said, "Oh, now there's three altogether. So this must be a graveyard, and we can't move any of them." Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, kol sheyagata larik yagata, lo amru shechunat kebarot ela lishlosha yeduin o lishlosha techila. So Rabbi Akiva said, "All this work that you did and looking around and checking out the situation, you did it in vain, because this law that you say three graves are designated as a graveyard and you can't move them, that's only if they're all three of the same type, either if all three were known already or all three are newly found, then you say this is a graveyard and you can't move them. But if it's just one or two of that were recently found, then you could move it." Okay, notlan ve'et tefusatan. Now the Mishnah says when you are allowed to move a grave, it's only one or two, and then you move it, you should move it together with the surrounding earth. Hechidami tefusa. How much is that earth that you have to move that's around it? Amar Rav Yehuda, amar Kera, un satani mimisrayim tol imi. So here's a source for this. When Yaakov tells Yosef that I want you to take my body after I die and carry me out of Egypt. So the word mi mitzrayim literally just means take me from Egypt. But you can read it also by itself. Mi mitzrayim, take some of Egypt with me, right? Tol imi, take some of the ground of Egypt where I'm buried and take it with me as well. This is interesting because actually he was mummified and seemed to be taken immediately, but maybe he didn't know that. Maybe he thought that he was going to be buried first and only sometime later. So when you take something, you take it with the ground, some of the ground around it. Okay, v'kama shiur tifusa, how much of the ground are surrounding it? Perash Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Sadok, notel afar tichoach, v'chofer b'betula shalosh espaot. So first of all, you have to take the loose dirt that's around it, because the loose dirt, we assume, absorbed from the blood, the moisture of the corpse, and so this part of the body is in that loose dirt. So for sure, any loose dirt that's around it, you have to take, and then you go and add more chobabitula, virgin ground, meaning ground that is hard and was not dug up, and so but maybe some of the moisture liquids seeped into that area also, and so we take a three finger breaths around the loose dirt. We also remove that together with the body, and that way we know we're transferring all the parts that were once part of the body together with the together with it. Okay, good. So that's the amount. But now we have a challenge from a Braita, Metibe Vekama Shiur Tefusa. Another Braita says, how much is the amount of the surrounding earth? Perash Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Sadok, notela tekismin v'takisasot, v'zoreket havadain, u'menechat hasefekot, v'ashar mistaref l'rob binyano shel met, u'l'rov ha'asamot l'mlo tarvad rakav. According to Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Sadok, what you do is you take any wood chips that you find nearby. They're probably from the coffin, so you have to take those with the body. And you take lumps of earth that might have been absorbed from the moisture of the body, and that also we have to take with us. And now anything that for sure is not part of the body, like some stones, pebbles, that you can throw away, just leave there. Manecha sifekot, things that you're not sure, leave them on the side, right? Because maybe they're part of the body, maybe they're not part of the body. So you're gonna put them in a separate category. Whereas everything else that is left over is surely part of the body. So since the rest of it is most likely part of the body, it has a law of imparting tumat mit. And it will join together to, if you're going to measure the majority of the structure of the body, or a quarter of a kab, or a ladle full of dust. These are all things that cause tumat met, even for tent impurity. And so you're going to count all these other things, the parts of the dirt that are nearby that most likely are part of or absorb some of the body. Those all will combine. Okay, so that's how you check how much it is. And so you see here that this is a different amount than taking all the dirt and the three finger breaths outside. This seems to be a smaller amount that you'd have to take around. It doesn't say anything about all the loose dirt and plus some of the virgin dirt that was around it. So we have a different and seems like a smaller amount. So how do we reconcile this? Hu de'amar ki haitana. The first statement of Rabbi Elazar, he had a different baraita that he followed. The Tanya v'kama shiur tefusa amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum ben azai. Notel afar tichoach v'chofer bebetula shalosh esbaot. So Rabbi Yochanan said the name of ben azai, according to, in this baraita, that you take the loose dirt and then you also dig around the packed dirt that's around it, three etzba'ot. And so you see these following this baraita. So we have two baraitot. One says, right, you take all the dirt plus the three finger breaths. And the other one says, no, you go through each thing and you throw out the things that you don't need and you keep the things that for sure are part of it. The things that you're not sure, you put on the side. And that's how you know how much around it to take. Good. Bodek hemenu. Now we mentioned that if you do find three in a row, you have to go and check 20 amot around it to see if there's yet another burial cave, a burial site. Amarava. Badak ufina, badak ufina, badak vashkach, la hai mafane le gabe hanach tere, vela hane tere le gabe hai chad. Rava says, let's say you checked and you found one body and you moved it. There's only one body there, so you're allowed to move it. But then you checked more, and you found yet another, and you moved it as well, because two, right? You're also allowed to move. And then you found a third, but you already moved the first two. You see the problem? Okay, so here, what do? So you cannot move the third one because of the two that you already moved, right? Because now that you know that there were three there, that third one that you found was part of a burial site and was meant to be permanent. So that third one has to stay there. But you also don't have to bring back those other two that you already moved and you put them in some cemetery elsewhere. You don't have to bring them back, right? Because at the time that you found them, you only knew about one or two of them. And so you move them with permission. And so now they're already there. So you can just leave it status quo. Okay, so that's Rava's opinion in one version. Ika de amre. Now there's another version of it. Amar Rava. Kevan shenitena l'reshut lefanot mefane lehon. So then this version is more lenient and says, once you have were given permission to move them, you can move even the third. In other words, you found one. Oh, I moved it. I found the second one, I also moved it. Those are totally fine because, right, it was only one and two. But when you find the third, well, since you already moved the first two, so now the third one is alone. And so we consider it also, well, while you're at it, since you moved the first two, we consider the third one as if it's a lone grave, and you can move that one also. So this version of Rava is even more lenient. All right, even though this is on the section of the Mishnah that says you check from there 20 amot, it actually sounds like it's talking about not when you found a whole three already and you're looking for another one, but rather when you find three next to each other. Okay, velishvinu shichunat kevarot, and now we ask, wait a second, in the second version, why don't you say this is a graveyard? Because now you found three new graves, and even though you took the other two, but now that you know it's a graveyard, you shouldn't be able to take the other three. In other words, it should be like the first opinion, the first version. Why are we so lenient? Amar Reish Lakish, Ayla Masu v'tiaru Eretz Yisrael. Reish Lakish says, technically you're right, right? Logically, we should. But we use this as a pretext in order to make Eretz Yisrael ritually pure. There are a lot of people in Eretz Yisrael, even after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, many people would keep the laws of purity. And so we don't want to have a lot of places in Eretz Yisrael that are graves and cemeteries. It's going to be very hard. I mean, the truth is, you know, Eretz Yisrael has been occupied by Bnei Yisrael for so long, for hundreds and hundreds of years, that there's likely graves all over the place. And so there's going to be a problem. You know, no Kohanim, people who want to keep Tahara, won't be able to walk anywhere. So therefore, we go out of our way and we find any loophole we can in order to purify an area and move out the graves and put them somewhere else, put them into an actual cemetery. And that way, people can walk and live and farm and do whatever they need to in that place. And so therefore, since we already moved one and two, so the third one, we say, oh, this is by itself, move it also. Badak me'esrim ama velo masa mai. Last question. If someone did find three in a row, so okay, that's a graveyard, and then as Mishnah said, you have to check 20 amot to see if there's another one. Let's say you did. You dug all around for 20 amot and you didn't find anything. Then that's it. That's all you have to do. It seems strange because if you found three, 20 amot is not that far, right? It is likely if there's a graveyard of just three, then there's other graves probably nearby. So how come you don't have to check more, right? Do you have to check more? Amar ben Ashiya bar Yirmiyah, Rav Shechunat Kevadot. Rav says, no, that only is the graveyard area, those three, and you don't have to worry about anything else all around it. We ask, my Tama, what's the reason that we're so lenient? Why don't you say, go say, check 100 amot, check more. Amar Resh Lakish, Ilama Asuvet Yaru et Eretz Yisrael. Resh Lakish, the same phrase he said before, we apply also to this, that the rabbis found a pretext and they wanted Eretz Yisrael to be pure, and therefore they were lenient. And they said, only check 20 amot. 20 amot, that's most likely where you're going to find it. Beyond 20, that's already less likely. We don't want to keep finding more and more graves. You're going to check, 21, 22 amot. You may find three graves and you're going to have to leave them there. And then you have yet another section of Eretz Yisrael that is off limits to those who want to keep Tahara. And so we, of course, if there are graves, we have to say it's tameh. But we can use any leniencies within the halacha in order to keep as much of Eretz Yisrael as possible to be tahor. We now come to the next Mishnah. This Mishnah does not have the phrase raglaim ladavar, but it does have similar logic that we go by the previous presumption, a kind of hazaka. Kol safek negaim b'techila tahor ad shelo nizkak letumah. Meshi nizkak letumah sefeko tameh. Anytime you see something that might be sara'at, right, you go to the Kohen, he has to check it out. Now, if one is unsure, is this a nega or not? So if the person was tahor to begin with, and then we have a presumption that he will be tahor, and so until he's established that he's tameh, he remains tahor. However, once it's been determined that he is tameh, and then any uncertainty from thereafter, we consider to be tameh. Okay, simple rule. We ask, Menaha Nemile, what's the source for this rule? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav says it's from a pasuk in the context of nega sarat, amar kera letaharo o letameo. These are the laws of sarat to make it pure or impure. Notice that it says tahor first, means we should always prefer tahor over tameh. So therefore, any safek, go with tahor. Since the pasuk starts with tahara, therefore, any case of doubt, we say tahor. That's the source. But now we question this. In that, if it's because of this pasuk, then in all cases, even if the person was already determined to be tameh, there's a safek, whether now it got better or not, we should presume tahor, because the pasuk says always tahor. So it can't be that this is the source. Rather, it's not from a pasuk, it's just based on logic of probability that we follow chazaka. If something was tahor from till now, we presume that as everything, the status quo, right, everything in motion stays in motion until there's sufficient force to move it out of its previous state. And so that's the reason. Whereas if someone was already tameh, then we presume tum'ah until we know for sure that it's tahor. So we don't need the pasuk for that. So when Rav said his statement, what was he talking about? Actually, Rav was said his statement regarding a different mishnah, also in Masechet Negaim. Ela kitmar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, aha itemar, im baheret kadma le'se'ar lavan tameh, im se'ar lavan kodem le'baheret tahor. Okay, here's the overall rule. If there is a snow white area that came first before the white hair, then it's tameh. However, if the white hair came first before the snow white area of the skin, then tahor. But what if we're not sure? Safek tameh. Okay, that's Tanakama. But Rabbi Yehuda omer keha. Rabbi Yehuda said this word that we're not sure what he meant by it. Keha. It means faint. It appears in the context of sarat, vim keha hanega, if it's faint. But Rabbi Yehoshua here seems to mean not that this particular case, it was faint, but rather the issue is faint, right? It's not clear to me what the answer is. So we ask, my keha, what did Rabbi Yehoshua mean by keha? Right? I'm not sure what it is, and therefore, be stringent or therefore be lenient? Amar Rav Yehuda, kehavita. Rav Yehuda says he meant we're not sure about it, so therefore be lenient. Wait, v'dilma kehavitameh. How do you know he meant that? Maybe to be Yeshua was saying we're not sure about it, and therefore in the case of Sefik we have to be tameh, and that he means he would agree with the Tanakama. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar kerad letaharo or letameo. Hoilu patach bo katub betahara techila. And this is what Rav was answering when he said the statement that since the pasuk says letaharo first, therefore in such a case, when we're not sure if this one came first or that one came first, we'll assume that it's tahor. That's the case we were talking about. But in the case of our Mishnah, that we don't need a pasuk for. That we just do the presumption of innocent while tahor. If he's already tahor before, he continues to be tahor. If he's tameh, he continues to be tameh. And we'll leave the next Mishnah for the following daf. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen ve'amen.